Not only in Southern California, but live in the Quicken Loans studios. Apply simply, understand fully, and mortgage confidently. Quicken Loans. Wednesday is an ATP day as well. The Ask the Pros. You know to submit a question to cbssportsradio.com/askthepros. Submit your question there. I'll read one of them later on. Remember, O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices, excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. All right, so in this hour, I've got Ray Allen, Hall of Famer, coming up next segment. That means this segment is wide open. Call now, 1-800-636-8686. Do some handiwork, get you caught up on a few things. Then we go to the phones. Rome, loved the pod hit with Elk. Not for the F-bombs or for the amazing content, but because he said something that is very important to all of us at Tiger Honk Inc. Tiger is back, and quote, he's going to win, mate. I don't care if he only hits 12% of the fairways. He's going to remind Spieth, Rory, JD, and all the others who could not handle the pressure of being the man that this is still his turf. War Tiger Snapchatting with Phil's wife while he ran Phil's show during the practice round. Tyler in Edmonton, president of Tiger Honk Inc. Already talked about how he's going to remind the other younger guys what it's like. And that was actually Elk's point, that Hefty and Tiger have been there before. They've won there before. If they're factored at the weekend, guys are going to feel it. And then guys, in Elk's words, are going to start squirting sandwiches. That's what he said, Alvin. Hey, Rome. Just laid down $50 on Tiger at 14-1. My question, how does the course look and how does Tiger feel? Need to know what my chances are. Ryan in Canada.
The golf course looks good. My golf swing feels good. I like my chances.
You gotta feel good about that, right? If I play that, he's not gonna be 14-1 much longer. Hope that answers your question. And this goes back to La Habra. The subject of this email is, oh, hell no, John. Oh, hell no.
Hey, John.
This email starts, hey, John.
Hey, John.
In Huntington Beach. Bro. What did we do to you? Sure, we're 15 minutes from the closest freeway, and we have to claim the Brea Mall. But we aren't bothering anybody. Signed, Jack in La Habra, currently working in Orange, wore the IE dirtbags, trashing John and HB's house on the U.S. Surf Open weekend. Signed, Jack. All right, so Jack is in La Habra, but working in Orange. That was an unsolicited run, unwarranted run that he took at La Habra, like John in Huntington Beach. John in Huntington Beach is the guy who calls up or emails and says things like, I'm smarter, I'm better looking, I'm in SoCal, I deserve this. And by the way, what are we doing about La Habra? Get La Habra. War La Habra being canceled from the Orange County or from the OC. Like, what the hell did La Habra do to anybody at all, much less you, John? Who are you, John? And why are you taking that unwarranted, unsolicited run at La Habra? What did La Habra do to anybody ever? All right, so let me start this hour with some breaking news. Somewhat breaking news. And stop me if you've heard this before, but the LA Rams have made a serious acquisition. Of course you've heard that before, because they've done it about every other day this offseason. Marcus Peters, Aqib Talib, Sam Shields. That seemed like a power trio unto itself, but that's just where they started. Last week, they add Ndamukong Suh. And then yesterday, they traded for the 23rd and 198th picks. They traded them to New England for Brandon Cooks and the 136th pick. So now what the Rams have is a reliable threat to stretch the field. A 24-year-old with three straight 1,000-yard seasons. He tied for the league lead in receptions on passes thrown 20 yards or more downfield. You think maybe head coach Sean McVay and quarterback Jared Goff might be cool with that. And if you didn't know it before, now you do. The Rams are going all in. They've taken off their watch. They pulled the car keys out of their pocket. They stacked them on top of the deed to their house, and they shoved it all right to the center of the table. And I love it. Mad respect. Again, they were so far ahead of schedule that if they didn't do anything at all this offseason, nobody would have said jack. Instead, they take some of the biggest swings imaginable. And in so doing, they send a message to their fan base and to the rest of the NFL that we're in it to win it, all of it, this season. It's badass. Badass moves. Ram it, baby. It's badass. And the reason it's badass, to a certain extent, is because it's not without risk. That's what makes it badass. It's a big risk because in the NFL, when you bring in this many new pieces, there are caveats, right? The caveat is teams who do this in one offseason rarely dominate the following season. And a lot of these guys, they only have under contract for one season. And a lot of times it doesn't work the next season because it's hard to get that many pieces onto the same page that quickly. And there is going to be a time when all these guys need to get paid, and that could get ugly. But for right now, Rams fans can dream of Sue and Aaron Donald killing quarterbacks, Peters and Tlaib ball hawking and housing picks, Goff airing it out while Todd Gurley runs through gigantic holes. I love it. I can't guarantee it's going to win. I can guarantee I think it's great. I love it. Such big swings. Serious, serious stones. It's brass. I love it. I don't hate it. I love it.
I love it.
There's nothing about it that I hate. It's incredible. Now, what about the flip side of that? What about the New England side? This is where things get pretty interesting and really on some level kind of dumb. Let's start with trading Cooks. They didn't want him because they didn't want to have to pay him after this year. When you look at what wide receivers are getting right now and what it would have cost to keep him, they didn't want to pay him. And then all of a sudden, you hear all this talk about how, you know, by the way, he didn't really fit our scheme. You know, the types of things that kind of get leaked out and slip out when they don't bring a guy back. Didn't fit their scheme. Have you seen the numbers this guy put up there? But apparently did not fit their scheme. All right, who am I to say? Not like I know more about that team than the hood knows about that team. So, great. Doesn't fit the scheme, and we know they didn't want to pay him. And apparently not a great fit. Yeah, well, especially if they don't have a left tackle. Then you really don't want Tom Brady waiting an extra second to throw a deep ball to Brandon Cooks, only for the old man to get knocked on his ass. Yeah, I guess in that regard, he doesn't fit the scheme. Not when you don't have a left tackle, not when you don't have a guy to buy you that extra second so that route can develop. And I guess if you want to use the argument, they can use that extra money on Gronk. And by the way, if you ever thought that they were actually going to trade Rob Gronkowski, you can forget that right now. Especially since two of Tommy's main targets, Cooks and Danny Amendola, are already gone. Interesting because now, for the first time in two decades, the Patriots have two first-round picks and two second-round picks in the same draft. Now, that's got to strike terror into the hearts of every single front office in the league because of the threat of the unknown. What's the Hood going to do? What does Hood know that nobody else knows? Is he going to trade up and take that big swing? Or is he going to trade down and stockpile even more picks? Or is he going to stay right where he is and use those picks? Who knows? That's what's so scary. You don't know what this guy's going to do. And then some have immediately jumped on this notion that he is going to trade up and he's going to take that big swing for a quarterback. Yeah, maybe. Maybe. And if Bill Belichick were to move up as high as he could to take as big a swing as he could for as big a name quarterback as he could, he may as well then turn around and punch Tommy right in the face. Because there'd be no greater bleep you to Tom Brady than to take three or four picks in the top 63 and not find a replacement at left tackle to watch Tommy's back, not find any pass rushers or a linebacker, but instead to draft his replacement and then shove him into the same quarterback room right along TB12. Isn't that why they gave Jimmy Garoppolo to the Niners? Because Tommy wanted him out of that quarterback room. They could not come to an agreement on contract terms with Garoppolo. Hey, I don't know. I don't know if they're going to use those draft picks to package and move up to draft TB12's eventual successor. I just know that I hope so. That'd be awesome. I would love to see that. Then I would have a reason to watch his Facebook show. Because the league MVP is not going to strap on a helmet at 41 so he can mentor a top four pick in the draft. And if you look at all the holes that the Patriots have in their roster, you really can't afford to throw all those picks at the second, third, or fourth best quarterback in the draft, can you? I mean, for what? Do that, and you might as well just go right to Tommy and to Robbie and tell them to retire right now. But then again, Belichick's a different dude. He does what he wants, when he wants, how he wants. And if he wants to keep this thing going, he'll use that collection of picks to fill those holes. But if he wants total chaos in Foxborough, even more than they have right now, then he will trade up and he will draft a quarterback. I don't root, but I think you know which angle I want to see and what I am rooting for. And if and when he does that, it will go to show that Belichick will virtually show anybody and everybody the door. Because the one guy who you think is untouchable is TB12. But then again, in the Hood's world, nobody is, right? Not even TB12. So it's going to be very interesting to see what they do with all those draft picks. Would they move up and take a shot at a big-time quarterback? And then how is that going to work when they ask TB12 to share a quarterback room with him and not get the help that he needs on the line? And he just took away one of his targets. And no, Odell Beckham Jr. is not coming either. Why would they trade Brandon Cooks because they don't want to pay him, but they're going to bring in Beckham? That makes no sense, Patriots fans. Don't be waiting on that. This guy thinks he's got it. Hey, Rome, I'll tell you exactly who won on that Cooks deal. The damn Rams did. There is nothing like trying to make a big splash in your new stadium and going for it all this year. If it doesn't work out this year for the Rams, I'm sure they'll get back to the top after mortgaging their future for the year sooner rather than later. Signed, Mikhail Prokhorov, selling his future for KG and Pierce and is still in shambles since 2013. It's a good point. Hey, they're not doing it so they can move into their new building and make a splash. They're not moving in for a couple of more years, but they are doing it to win this year. Another reason why I like it so much. I mean, in part, it's about that stadium. But in part, some of these guys will not be there for that new stadium. In all, they're doing it to win right now. It's brass, Matt, and you know it. You know it. Who would you rather be right now, Matt? Let me ask you this. Who would you rather be right now, the Rams or the Patriots? Who would you rather be right now, the Rams or the Patriots? I'm taking the Rams all day long. Right now? Right now. Old man coach down to his last few years? Youngest head coach who's a rock star in the NFL. Old man quarterback, down to his last year. Franchise quarterback, just getting his start. Talent across the board. Rather be the Rams than the Patriots right now. Right now for the next few years and going forward. When we come back, we talk to a Hall of Famer. Ray Allen joins us. And then on the back end of that, time for your telephone calls.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Rolling right through hour number three on this Wednesday. Welcome back. I'm Jim Rome. Telephone call is coming up in a minute, but as promised, we are joined by a two-time NBA champion, a 10-time All-Star, the NBA's all-time leader in three-point shots made. He was an All-American and a Big East Player of the Year at UConn, an Olympic gold medalist, a member of the Hall of Fame class of 2018, and the author of From the Outside, My Journey Through Life and the Game I Love, which is out right now. We are joined by Ray Allen. Ray, good morning. It's great to have you on the program. How are you?
I'm good. How you doing, Jim? Thanks
good.
For having me.
Good, Ray. Great to get caught up. You know, there are a lot of things I want to talk to you about, Ray, but let me start right here. Take me back to the weekend where you were officially introduced as a member of the Hall of Fame class of 2018. What was that moment like for you?
It was certainly a whirlwind, Jim. We came from the whole week in New York promoting the book tour, and then toward the end of the week, I get this phone call. I was actually traveling from New York to Boston, and they tell me, hey, you've been inducted into the Hall of Fame class of 2018. And then obviously, you know, Grant and Jason and Steve and Charlie Scott and Keenan Thompson, some great names, some people that I looked up to and people who I came into the league with. It was such an amazing week I had, and I just feel so honored and privileged to be, like, able to at the end of the road, say it ended up with a Hall of Fame nod.
Ray Allen joining us. You know, Ray, you mentioned that class. Like, as I look back on your journey, and this is something you've talked about in your book, you kept progressing as a player at every single level. I mean, from high school to college to the NBA, you became part of a smaller and more elite group every step of the way. Now you're in the Hall of Fame, and you go in with a class, part of a class which includes Jason Kidd, Steve Nash, and Grant Hill, among others. So what's it feel like to know that you are now part of the most elite group in basketball history?
Well, I learned a stat that said that there's maybe only 150 to 160 living Hall of Famers. So to think about how select few people that is an amazing feat. And then, you know, just to think about everybody that I came along with, to be able to go from one stage to the next and to continue to improve. I've been equating it to a video game. You know, when you start one level and if you beat the guy at the end and you get to the next level, I believe we all go through that type of challenge in life where you have somebody that stands in your way and you have to learn something from them, good or bad, to be able to move on. But one way or the other, you have to improve who you are to get to the next level.
We're talking to Ray Allen. Ray, in the book, you open up by writing about the final seconds of Game 6 of the 2013 Finals against the Spurs. That was the game where you hit that legendary shot that forced the game into OT, where you eventually won it and then won Game 7. So when you close your eyes and you think about that game, what thoughts or images come to mind?
I'm glad I didn't miss.
Right.
Yeah, because most people, and this is the way I operate in life, is they're afraid to take that shot because they don't want to be the one that didn't help their team. And ultimately, you end up hurting your team if you don't take the shot. But ultimately, I think, what if I make the shot as opposed to what if I miss? And that's about everything in life. Like, you give your best to something, and then you see what the outcome may be. But for the most part, you prepare yourself so when the opportunity comes, you're ready to perform. It doesn't always go in your favor, but for the most part, you can say you gave it your all. You know, one of my favorite quotes is the man in the arena, Franklin Roosevelt. You know, just the fact that people showed up, those are the ones that count. Those are the men that stood up and were there to be accountable for.
You know, Ray, it seems to me, I get that. You're right. There's something about the man in the arena, the guys who are actually doing it. But if you take it a step further, and to the other point that I think you're making, it still takes a different breed to want that ball in the moment. And as you realize, in your career, you were always that guy who wanted the ball in that situation, but not everybody does. What do you make of the guys who don't want that ball in that moment?
Well, the guys who don't want that moment or the ball in that moment are guys that don't practice those situations. The one thing that I was always meticulous about is in the game scenarios, coming out of timeouts, like ending games, where's everybody going to be? What are we going to figure it out? And I learned this because I had good coaches that made sure that we focused on the small little minute details of the game. And so for me, what I focused on was you got to make free throws and you got to put yourself in a situation where you can make a three that you're not standing still because somebody's rushing out on you. So you got to practice that routine every single day.
Ray Allen joining us. He's a member of the Hall of Fame. He's got a book out too. Ray, I feel like when you and I talked years ago, we talked about your routine, and it is the pregame routine especially is the stuff of legend. Mark Cuban said that whenever you came to town, he would go to the gym early just to watch you go through your pregame routine. How did that routine come about and why was that so important to you?
At first, I would be on the floor. I remember my first year, I would just be out there just kind of messing around. And Chris Ford actually yanked my chain a little bit. And he said, you know, young fella, you just don't do anything. You don't have a routine. You just are just kind of fluttering around. And so what happened was I took Michael Curry and Elliot Perry. And we developed a routine where the three of us figured out the time that we can get to the floor where there was nobody else out on the floor. We can go out and just shoot, be on the floor and off the floor before anybody else came in, because we used to always, early, we'd have big guys up there shooting shots, and we were like, we couldn't focus. So we found a good time to get there and get our shots up and be off the floor and be prepared. And then as they moved on and I was by myself, it's just something I just crafted over time that I just started figuring out how to shoot. If I had the guy to rebound for me, if I was in there by myself, a lot of times I'd shoot in gyms where there was no lights. You know, sometimes I had to borrow clothes because my trainer wasn't there yet. So I was just prepared for all things, but I would never let anybody stop me from getting my shots up.
Hall of Famer Ray Allen joining us. Ray, something that comes up in your book a number of times is the first time you saw Michael Jordan on TV against the Knicks. What was it about the way that he played that had such an impact on you?
Well, I learned that the game was more than just, you know, playing basketball, shooting the ball, putting it in the hoop. He played with such a grace and flair that he could make shots. I remember he kind of went to the hole and he took the contact and he put the ball up behind his head and it hit off the glass. It was like, how did he know where the basket was? How did he know how to just get through everybody the way he did? And I saw how he took the game and he played it on another level from what everybody else was playing. And I wondered, could I ever get to that level of playing?
Ray Allen's got a book out. It's called From the Outside, My Journey Through Life and the Game I Love. That book is out right now. You know, Ray, you came into the league and you went through some seasons where there was not a lot of winning. And then, of course, you go to Boston and you join Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce. The three of you had been through a lot of losing in your career. So how did that impact the way you approached the challenge in Boston?
Well, we knew when we got to Boston, we weren't focused on who was going to lead the team in scoring or who was going to shoot the last second shot. We were mainly focused on winning. It wasn't about all-star games or contracts. We had been through that phase in our lives where you needed extra touches. Why didn't I get the ball at the end of the game? Or, you know, just the small little minute details that you focus on that make you somewhat of a young, selfish, immature player. But when we got to Boston, it was like all that stuff, okay, let's get rid of all that. Like, we're not worried about that. We just want to win. And whatever it takes for us to win, we're going to do it, and we're going to do it every single night.
All right, so if you guys all come together and you're all about the right stuff and it works, but then you win a championship, then you have that success that you're all grinding so hard for, once you get that, how hard is it then to keep it all together and try and come back and repeat? Does winning change people?
Winning certainly changes people because typically you want more. You've proven that you can do your job and you should get paid more. There's a contract that somebody's playing for, or you're a young player and you want to make the all-star team. Now you start looking at individual goals that you can accomplish and what we're doing as a team. And ultimately, for every team out there, no matter what level you play at, if you win one year and you have an opportunity to win next, that's probably the hardest thing you have to deal with is the expectation of the players. And it's a great coach that could manage those expectations going into that next year where you get everybody to go back. It's like ask a player to improve himself but still play into your role that you played the previous year and improve that role.
And everything's dynamic, right? Everything changes. And speaking of dynamic, I mean, Ray, as great as it was to win there, the dynamic between the members of the 08 Celtics championship team has been a bit unusual, to say the least. And as you've said, there has been some vitriol directed at you from the guys who you regarded as brothers. I know you've talked about this, Ray, so I won't belabor the point. But as you look back, what was that whole experience like for you as a person?
You know, it was tough as a person because, you know, bonds are created in this game. Friendships are crafted. Families grow because you take on, you know, family members of other teammates and their siblings and their mothers and their grandfathers. You get to know them very well. And then to see that change just because you move teams is disappointing. So, for me, you just have to move on because for us, it's how do we continue to move forward and grow? And like, you know, and I think most people do know, like, the game of sports, it's a professional business, and we have to move on, and you got to move to the next team and figure out how to get better and ultimately win a championship if that's hopefully should be your goal.
It is a business, and I would even argue, Ray, that there really is almost no loyalty in professional sports, and if there is, it's very, very rare. So in your personal experience, Ray, when you see bonds like that that are broken, generally do they get repaired, or once they break, is that it, and does everybody just move on?
Well, I always say anger is a tough emotion to control. You can have the gift of anger. You use the anger that you have and you use it as a force to make your life better because you want to improve on things, but not to prove that you're right because it's not a right or wrong situation. But you learn from it and you grow and you figure out, okay, you know, in certain situations I was probably immature and you know, I shouldn't have been mad at this person. I should have learned from them. And that's a lot of what my relationship growth has been over the course of my time in my life. And so now I can sit here as a grown man having written this book that there's so many people that I learned from, good and bad, that ultimately made me who I was, ultimately end up winning championships. So it all takes the person's growth, their personal growth, their maturity to say, you know, what was I mad about? Like, if we were playing a game, like, what was the big deal?
We're talking to Ray Allen. You know, Ray, as you look over your career, and you and I can go on and on and on, there's so many areas of your career that we could talk about because it was an amazing career, and this is a great book you've written. Let me finally ask you this. I could ask you about any of your other teammates, but I have to ask you about one of my all-time favorites, Sam Cassell. What was it like to play with Sam Cassell and spend time with Sam?
Well, it's funny that you say that because he's one of my favorite teammates because Sam, the ultimate competitor, any young player that came into the league, you just thought you had the best, you can get the best of him because he wasn't athletic. You didn't look at him and you weren't intimidated by him. But Sam was, he was a competitor. He was a player. Like, he was so crafty around the basket. He had a great mid-range game. He could shoot the three if he was out there. His post-up game was tougher than anybody's. And so no matter what was happening in the game, he always felt like he had an opportunity to win. And that was the thing that I admired most because I've been around a lot of players that would give up on you because, you know, the game was over. But Sam would always keep fighting. And then he had great character. Like, he had great charisma. Like, he could talk to anybody. And he always had this exuberance for the game and for life. And that's something I always appreciated about him.
He's a member of the Hall of Fame class of 2018. Ray Allen also has a book out. It's called From the Outside, My Journey Through Life and the Game I Love, and it is out right now. Ray, it's been a minute or two, but it's so good to get caught up. Thanks so much, Ray. Great to
Always
talk to do. You.
Thank you, Jim. Appreciate it.
Great talking to you, Ray. Thanks so much. Ray Allen, 2-time NBA champion, 10-time All-Star, and a member of the Hall of Fame. Quick reminder, this segment brought to you by... I said at the very top, didn't I? It was going to be a huge day. Takes for days and four big interviews. We had Dana White, we had Gerard Gallant, we had Kalani Sitake, and that right there, Ray Allen, member of the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame class of 2018. And then on the back end, one last segment. Jump in right now. First things first, I've got the ATP for you. The Ask the Pros brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. You want to thank O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Kevin in New York asks, if you were competing in the field of the Masters, who would you choose to be your caddy? One of your sons, a relative, Janet, or Alvy? It's kind of a laughable concept, me playing at the Masters. Laughable because I belong to a club, I have belonged to the same club since the early 2000s, and I still do not play. Wow, Rome, pretty smart. Why do you do that? Because I keep thinking I'll get to it. I haven't yet. So that's pretty laughable. Me playing in the Masters when I really don't play golf. But pay dues at a club. And can I tell you something? I'm their favorite member. They love me. I'm great. I never show up. I pay dues. I don't take anybody's time, anybody's space. Never have to bump into me in the locker room. I'm their favorite member. Never took a divot. I don't do jack. I show up like once a quarter because if I don't and I don't eat, they charge me anyway. So me playing at the Masters is pretty funny. If I did, however, and I had to pick a caddy, that's tough. Elk, maybe. Elk would do it. Elk would be riotous. If Elk had better things to do, probably my younger son, Logan, because the kid cracks me up. Like, he likes to say, hey, Dad, you and me are funny. Jake and Mom are nice. And we just crack wise the whole time. Man, I can't wait till that kid's old enough to have a cocktail. He can already distinguish between vodka and gin. No, better yet, he can distinguish between different gins. And the kid's 13. Good parenting, right? No, I just give the kid the olives. He literally can tell what I'm drinking by the olive. So, Logues, you'd be it. In fact, for the first time ever, Logues, he's on spring break. He hit me today with, not even like, Dad, good morning. Dad, how are you? Dad, I love you. Dad, what's cracking? Just, Dad, what station are you on? Even Logue's got caught up in the whole San Diego thing. I said, son, Sirius XM, channel 206. Hit him back about a half hour later. You find it? Are you listening? Yep. Just yep. Not, hey, Dad, this is cool. Hey, Dad, good show. Hey, Dad, funny bit. Hey, Dad, good interview. Just yep. So what's popping, Logan?
Yep.
Let's see. What else do we have here? Let's go to the emails quickly. Actually, a tweet. At the Real Left Hook tweets. Step one, win the offseason. Step two, win the Super Bowl. Step three, ram it for 3 hours under the show on that Monday. Oh, I would. If the Rams win it all, we do the entire show with that as a bed. At Brian C60 tweets, the Rams can make all the moves they want. Still won't fill that stadium. Signed, better things to do in L.A. Yeah, I don't know about that. But then again, who's going to fill the Coliseum? Who? What NFL team? What event? What anything is going to fill the Coliseum? It's like max occupancy of like 400 grand. Who's going to fill that place? Snagger. There is a reason why they call La Habra Guada La Habra. Forget about it being kicked out of the OC. It needs to be kicked off the planet. Signed, Mike from the Jewel of the IE, Rancho Kook. War me living near Eric Weddle. Holy bleep. Somebody from Rancho Cucamonga saying that someplace else should not only be kicked out of the OC, but kicked off the planet. Damn, Mike. Really? Before I take this telephone call, I think I need a little bit of background on it. Adam Hawk, throw the cans on. Let's do this. Yeah, way to button your shirt all the way to the top button again.
Thank you.
Looks terrible.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So what do we got right here? You've got Tim in Houston. For those who don't know, who is this guy? What does he want to cover?
Tim in Houston made a call a couple weeks ago when Pineapple Express was on its way and Winter Storm Toby was on its way. And he said, hey, here in the Central Coast, Houston, it's 72 and I'm on my way to the track with my luxury wrenches clanging around in the back of my truck. He was flexing on everybody. The problem is it was a tremendous phone call on an absolutely horrible phone line and everyone let him know about that. So since then, because you're a big iPhone guy, he went out, got a new iPhone, got a new blower, and he's ready for a follow-up call right now.
Hawk, that was like the best interaction you and I have ever had. Well done.
Thank you so much.
Well done. Like you knew, not that it was an athlete, but it was a caller, but you knew him.
We didn't have to talk sports, which is great.
I think that's why that went so well.
I was not
exposed. We didn't talk sports.
Exactly. I was not exposed.
You didn't do anything embarrassing like get ink of your cat.
Right.
You were not exposed for not knowing anything about sports. You stay in your lane. You do what you do. You're a very, very good producer.
Thank you. It was a good spot for me.
Unless the call sucks, and then it goes back to being like every one of your spots.
That's unbelievable.
Right.
Pretty horrible. Let's find out. All right, so there's the background on Tim in Houston. He had that great call, but he had bad sound quality, got himself a new phone. We got to find out how that golf round went and whatever else is on his mind. Tim in H-Town. Tim, what's going on?
Hey, Rome. Good afternoon. I thought I'd call because it's 72 whole week in Augusta, Master Week. So I thought I'd call and tell you about my round at Champions. Did I mention that Jackie freaking legend Burke won the 1956 Masters? I have a good memory. It's just short. But I need to clear up a couple things before I do. Yeah, since you mentioned the call sounded like I was on John and Little Rock's phone, and realizing that you are an iPhone guy, I now have a new one. Second, clone. Luxury wrenches mean luxury golf clubs, sticks, bats, you know, wrenches, not actual tools like Jeff in the 919 or Craig in Houston, whose little portable radio apparently only picks up AM. But I'm guessing most clones can't afford golf clubs, so they don't know what I'm talking about. That's what was going clickety-clack in the back. Anyway, Rome, so I have this 1205 tee time, as I mentioned last week, and I was feeling pretty good. I was ready to go. So I headed out to number one and put a tee and took a mighty swing and it went. So I got.
That's not a good call. No.
You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
All right, Tim, so you upgraded your phone. Let's go ahead and upgrade your speaker set, your computer, or whatever you're using to try to perform any kind of production value whatsoever. Strike one, strike two, strike three. Now you're done. Sit down.
Now I'm done.
This guy was feeling it, wasn't he? Like, I got myself a new iPhone. All right, I sound good, look good, sound good, sound good, feel good, feel good, perform well. And then all of a sudden he's like, yeah, man, I'm doing great. I think I'll mix in some production value. I'm not exactly sure where he was going with that. It sounded like he wanted to reset some of his earlier call. I mean, it was okay. That whole thing about clones, this is insert, but the clones wouldn't know because they can't afford it. You know, that whole rap is very tired, not funny at all. But he was coming along pretty nicely until he went for that big swing, that high degree of difficulty, where they mix in production value in the call. Don't do it. Just keep it simple. A good, strong take is good enough. Unless you've done this before, don't get out in front of your tips. Don't take too big of a swing. Man, just keep it in the fairway. Here's an analogy you can understand. Just keep it in the fairway. Do not play for the pin. Man, just get on the green. Don't start mixing in production value, at least until you learn how to use that new iPhone. Start off okay. And then he took it right into the side of the mountain. Didn't get that plane down. Took it right into the side of the mountain. Thanks for knowing you. Thanks for coming. Did any call get saved, Alvin? Did we take any calls today even? You know who made a brief appearance? Lauren. And by brief appearance, she was on hold like 2 hours. And then right when I was going to go to her, she was gone.
I'm your clone guy.
Oh, and what do you know? There she is. Why not? We got a minute or two left. Let's find out what's going on in Naples. Lauren in Naples is a huge Michigan fan. She felt pretty good about their team, and then they got hammered in the championship game. I better check in on her. Lauren, what's going on?
Check in.
What's going on?
Upset. Big upset Michigan fan. We got annihilated.
So what were you thinking, Lauren, when you were watching that game? How was that going for you? And where did you watch that game? Were you at the Yacht Club for the game?
I was at home. I had all my gear on, and it just went haywire. I don't know what the hell. I don't know what went down, but Rockman scored 23 points. We can't do it alone. Mo was not thrown down, so there's no Mo. So then you got Dante, the redheaded with the Italian last name, throwing it down, 5 3-pointers, 15 points down the hatch. It was hard to watch, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, it sounds like you're still having a tough time with that, right? You're not over that yet.
No, I'm not.
So you got to go to the Yacht Club and do what you do there and just forget about the whole thing. The Yacht Club makes everything better.
I'm trying to take a break from that. I got a job. I got to work. You know what I'm saying?
No, I mean, not really. Didn't you have a job and didn't you have to work the last time you called up when you went to the Yacht Club?
Oh, yeah, that's true. Beeline's crew had a perfect mix. Drivers and shooters. He had veterans and game-ready young players.
Let me tell you something, Lauren. That's how you close a show, first of all, Lauren. Well done. Hey, Tim, that's how it's done. Lauren from Naples calling up, breaking it down. Take, take, take. Rack me. Thanks for coming. You want to thank O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Lauren, this is where you call back and say you got disconnected. All right. Got it in. We had Dana White. We had Gerard Gallant, we had Kalani Sitake, we had Ray Allen, we had Lauren, and now I'm done. My thanks to the XR4TI. Have yourself a great, great day. Right back here tomorrow. Lots to get done then. See you then. We're out.